Welcome to Season 14 of the Art of Teaching podcast. I'm Matthew Green, and I'm so grateful that you've joined me today. Before we get started with our discussion, I would like to acknowledge the Dharawal people, the traditional custodians of this land on which I'm recording, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. I acknowledge the stories, traditions, and living cultures of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples on this land. Today, it's my great pleasure to reshare a conversation that I recently had with Ian Timbrell. He's a former teacher who now spends his time ensuring that no student has to go through the challenges that he faced while he was at school. We all want schools to be places where students are seen and valued, and we all want schools that are more diverse and inclusive for everyone. I won't give too much away here, but I encourage you to listen. He is incredibly brave, and it was wonderful to speak with him. Please take the time to listen to the whole conversation. The link will be below.
I think the difficulty is, although, you know, I don't feel as educators, and across the world, educators aren't paid actually for the work that they do. I was in a position where I was well paid, you know, I was above the average wage in the UK. And, it, you know, if I just did go into another career, I would be starting from scratch again. So I had to accept straight away that I probably would be taking a pay cut for a while. But you know, I've got a mortgage to pay. I've got a 9-year-old boy who eats more than I do. And, you know, that was a huge consideration. Yeah. But I had to go, well, actually, what's more important? That we can go on a lovely summer holiday, so you're happy for 2 weeks of the year, but you're miserable for the other 50. You know, what is important here? And we sort of sat down and looked at our budget and realized, you know what? If the worst happened and I didn't earn any money in this new job, actually, we could survive. And it would be surviving, but actually I would be doing what I love for the first time in quite a long time. So definitely that, and that was actually the money was the scariest thing for me about leaving, because it was that for the first time in 15 years, I wasn't going to get a salary, you know, I wasn't going to get so it was terrifying, but I was lucky, you know, I had the support of my partner and my family to take the plunge.
Yeah. And thank goodness for supportive partners and families, and what would your advice, Ian, be to somebody who maybe felt like that they were in the same position that you were in?
It was really stuck.
What would your advice be?
It was really interesting. One of the first meetings I had, so when I went freelance and I decided I wanted to help schools with advisory and consultancy, was actually with a head teacher who wanted training in their school, but actually said, oh, do you mind if the second half of the meeting I can have a chat with you how to get out? So literally I was like, oh, I've only been doing this a week. I'm not really sure.
That's funny. Did you charge him for that? Did you like, well, I can, but my consultancy fee is this.
Do you know what? I did not think of that. I should have thought of that. There's a new niche.
It's a little bit mean, isn't it, to send someone an invoice when you know they're down. But I do think that's interesting. I mean, what was that like to be in that?
It was, I think we have, and I'm not sure if it's the same in Australia, but in the UK, we have a retention crisis with leadership in schools.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's really worrying. And what they were saying was that they did the job for 15 years and they felt like they couldn't get anything else out of it. And they wanted to do a new challenge and they loved the job. So it was a very different situation to me, whereas I felt like I wasn't happy in a job. They were very happy in a job, but felt like they need to do something different. So I sort of chatted them through the process. You know, I went to a business manager. I did my research. I spoke to other people who were doing similar roles to me to actually find out and get the realities, both the ups and the downs. And I've got a meeting with him in a few weeks, actually, which would be interesting to see if he's done anything about it, because, you know, this person is from an award-winning school, would be snapped up to support other schools. You know, he's turned around 3 failing schools, so he's in a really good position to do it. But again, it is, and the biggest thing for him was like, oh, it's taking the plunge, isn't it? You know, if I leave here, I don't have a contract for the first time in so many years. So it is that fear that holds you back. And I think in teaching, we're not very good at taking the plunge because we are used to security. Teaching is a very secure job. You have to mess up quite badly to lose your job in teaching, I think. Certainly in the UK, it's very difficult to lose your job. And I think mostly the way is redundancy and you're very well protected. So we're used to being protected. And that vulnerability that comes being self-employed is something that we're just not used to.
And look, Ian, we will move. I'm sure the people that are listening are like, just ask him what he does, because I promise we'll move on to that. Just one more question before we do. Two more questions, sorry. What was your upbringing like? And also, what are you most grateful for from your parents? You talked about the significant role that your family had in supporting you, but is there anything else that you're really grateful for from your parents?
Yeah, so when I was born, my family were we didn't have any money. We lived in a council owned house. We were going paypack to paypack. My dad was an electrician in the steelworks, and I remember having conversations about having no money and the meals we used to have. Buying food was a struggle, paying bills was a struggle. So I very much was used to early on, when I was very young, of knowing what it's like to have nothing. My dad then, when I was about six, set up his own business, which an estate agency business, and it absolutely exploded. It went amazingly well. And all of a sudden, the rest of my childhood, I was very lucky and very privileged that I got whatever I wanted. But there was always that tinge of knowing where you've come from. And I've always valued that, of going, actually, I'm very lucky. I got to travel the world. I got to see things. I got wonderful gifts. However, I also had to work. So from the age of 10, I had to work. I did a paper round. I worked in a shop. I handed out leaflets, because my parents' view very much was, if you want to get money, you earn money. So they had a logic that I only got pocket money if I had a job, which as a kid, I could not understand, but it gives you that work ethic, because you know that if you don't work, you don't get money. That's and they were right. Always supportive, but they were very supportive in their own way. Right. I grew up in a very small town where my parents were very similar. You had to fit into a certain box. So the box that everyone fitted into in the town I came from was rugby players. Men were men, women were women. And I always felt like I never quite fit in. I felt like my identity was never allowed to be what I wanted it to be. I had to hide myself for quite a long time. And that's, I love my parents to bits, and they've learned a lot over the years. But certainly then, the image they had for me was, right, he will play rugby till he's 18. When he leaves, he'll go to university, he will become a doctor. My plan was sort of set out for me when I was, about 7 years old. And that's really difficult, and something that very much I felt like I was living up to something my whole time and never could. I was never going to achieve what they wanted to.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the podcast episode today. It's a privilege to get to share these conversations with you and continue to invest into our incredible profession. If you have a few moments, please do me a favor and leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or through whichever platform you're listening today. If you wouldn't mind also hitting the subscribe button and sharing it with your networks, it would really help to get the word out to as many educators as possible. There are different ways to connect in the notes below, including links to the website, the Facebook group, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. It means the world.